Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a loaded Tuesday live in L.A. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Le'Veon Bell of the Jets stops by. Reggie Bush. Joy Taylor is joining me 1 hour from now. The Herd hierarchy, which is going to be the hardest Herd hierarchy ever. What do we do with San Francisco and Seattle this morning after one of the great NFL games in recent memory? God, I swear the last four or five football games, including LSU-Bama, I've watched, have come right down to the wire. What a weekend of football,
yeah,
period.
Yeah, this whole weekend has been a treat. That was an amazing watch last night.
An amazing watch. Let's start right here. The only thing worse than having to face that San Francisco defense is having to face them trailing, which is what happened to Russell Wilson last night. Oh, by the way, 7 for 15, 35 minutes time of possession, 24 of 34. I know. There's this great new kid named Lamar Jackson. Everybody's in on all that that MVP Lamar Jackson talk. Y'all need to settle down just a tad here because, you see, Lamar Jackson has this advantage over Russell Wilson. When he plays, he has a full complement of players with him. Last night against San Francisco, on the road, trailing early, he was down to one functional tight end, something called Jacob Hollister, a practice squad guy, a rookie wide receiver, DK Metcalf, who can't run many routes. Josh Gordon had been in Seattle 10 days. Undrafted Malik Turner, who at one point Pete Carroll said, "Who's Malik Turner?" None of us knew, and I'm from Seattle. Late in the game with that, against that defense on the road, multiple times Russell Wilson had winning potential drives up and down the field. Had Seattle's game been on last week against Tampa, the MVP race is over. But Seattle tends to be, you know, right next to Alaska and Idaho, so it's geographically isolated. The only reason their games get on TV, period, the last 10 years is Russell Wilson. Maybe last 7, 6, 5, whatevs. My point is, let's stop the MVP talk. There are guys playing quarterback, guys learning how to play quarterback, and about 3 guys in this league that have mastered quarterback. You were watching one. Russell Wilson, in his career, he has faced 6 times a team that is 8 games or better above 500, meaning, translation, a great team. He's 6-0. Last night, this is a guy that makes everything work for Seattle. 3 years ago, he led the NFL in touchdown passes with the lowest rated offensive line. Tom Brady can't do that. Aaron Rodgers can't do that. Patrick Mahomes can't do that. Drew Brees can't do that. Dan Marino couldn't do that. John Elway couldn't do that. Joe Montana can't do that. I'm not sure Deshaun Watson can do that. That's insane. Everybody works with him. Doug Baldwin goes to Stanford, undrafted, becomes a star. Tyler Lockett is a gadget guy out of Kansas State, becomes a star. They have a tight end. I'm from Seattle. The Huskies had a tight end named Will Disley. He was a blocking tight end. He actually started playing defense. They moved him over to tight end. His junior year, he had 2 catches. He ends up with Seattle. He got hurt this year, and we all said, oh, my God, how are they going to make it without Will Disley? He made Will Disley a name. He works with everybody. By the way, the last 2 quarterbacks that got drafted number 1, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, got drafted because of him. And I wouldn't be shocked if this morning Russell Wilson isn't at a children's hospital with sick children. Have you ever seen this guy emotionally? Last night he throws a pick. And he's like, all right, goes to the sidelines. Let's go, let's go, let's go. I mean, I always talk about 30% of what you're paying a quarterback is leadership. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, Brady occasionally shows emotion, not a bunch, but some. Russell Wilson throws a Super Bowl interception. He throws an interception last night. It doesn't bother him for a minute. He is so unique. I like Lamar Jackson. He's still figuring out how to play quarterback. He gets to play the Bengals twice a year. Russell Wilson's got to play the Rams twice. He got to play the Niners twice. By the way, the surprise team in the league not called the Raiders is Arizona. He's got to play them twice. He's got to face McVay and Wade Phillips and Kyle Shanahan. You got to be kidding me. I like Lamar. I'm a Lamar fan. I like a lot of these young quarterbacks, but what you're watching here is ridiculous. This is absurd. On the road, San Francisco practice squad tight ends, undrafted wide receivers. I'm from Seattle. I don't know who these guys are. I mean, could they? Josh Gordon's been there 10 days, and that worked. New England's like, enough Josh Gordon. Russell Wilson's like, I'll take Flash. Boom, boom. Two huge catches last night. I just think we're looking at a guy, no losing seasons ever. Just doesn't, you know, we make excuses for Cam. He's never had back-to-back winning seasons. Russell Wilson's never had a losing season. NC State, win, win, win. Wisconsin, win. Seattle, win, 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 win. You know how hard that is in the NFL without Bill Belichick as your coach? Do you know how hard it is? Look what happened to Atlanta this year. Look at Philadelphia struggling. We've had Aaron Rodgers the last 2 years couldn't win in Green Bay. Patrick Mahomes has lost 3 straight starts. You know how hard it is to win in this league? I mean, Lamar's great. But you got to be kidding me. I'm watching him last night. And it wasn't a stat night for him. Last night wasn't about stats. And the MVP's about stats. That's not what last night was about. It was about leadership and moxie and toughness and a big mistake and overcoming it and dealing with used parts. Here's Russell Wilson afterwards.
It's the craziest game I've ever been a part of. I mean, you know, talking about a Monday Night Football game, it felt like NFC Championship game right there. Just back and forth, two great teams going after it. We knew it was going to come down to the wire. I said it earlier in the week, I thought it was going to come down the wire. Didn't think it was going to come down to overtime, no more time on the clock kind of wire. But that's just a true amazing moment, wildest game, most amazing game I've been a part of for sure.
And I said this about Tiger Woods. Just enjoy Tiger Woods. Because Tiger left, and for years and years, we were like, that guy's Tiger, and that guy's Tiger, and Rory's Tiger. And I'm like, no. There's no more Tiger. We're never going to see anything like Russell Wilson. Kyler Murray's interesting. He's a prototype, but this guy's crazy. I mean, he's just out of his mind unique. All right, let me go to this. Jimmy Garoppolo's getting a lot of heat this morning. Man, he looked rattled. That guy looked flustered. Okay, we get so spoiled watching Russell Wilson, who's mastered the position, and Drew Brees has mastered the position, and Tom Brady. They've taken all these snaps. They've been college starters for years. That you watch a Brady in the two-minute drill and a Brees and a Russell Wilson, and yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo is a little flustered. There's a bunch of quarterbacks in this league that are very young and very good, and I like most of them. I like Sam Darnold. I like Carson Wentz. I like Dak. I like Lamar. I like Jimmy Garoppolo. I like Deshaun Watson. I like Patrick Mahomes. But these guys' games swing wildly because they're learning the position. What did Jimmy Garoppolo have to endure last night? Let's think about it. Oh, he faced Pete Carroll, arguably the best defensive coach in this league for a decade, not named Bill Belichick. For all young quarterbacks, their performances are based on who did they face? Pete Carroll. How's their offensive line's health or match up? Oh, I don't know. Did you watch the game last night? A 5-story building named Jadeveon Clowney was chasing Garoppolo over the field. You think that gets into your head a little bit? And oh, by the way, what are your weapons? You saw Dak when Zeke left. Deshaun Watson didn't have a left tackle. Carson Wentz didn't have a deep threat. Patrick Mahomes doesn't have Kareem Hunt. You noticing with the young quarterbacks? Last night, no George Kittle. Emmanuel Sanders got hurt. It was a bunch of kids, most who couldn't catch. I mean, when it comes to young quarterbacks, ask yourself, what defense are they facing? Pete Carroll. How's your offensive line doing? Last night, not great. Sacked 5 times. Jadeveon Clowney, best game as a pro. What's the update on your weapons? Patrick Mahomes was not the same without Kareem Hunt. Jared Goff when Cooper Kupp got hurt. Dak without Zeke. Deshaun Watson without a left tackle. Yes, Carson Wentz without a deep threat, Deshaun Jackson. These young quarterbacks swing wildly based on those three factors, and Jimmy Garoppolo last night was good enough to get him. He didn't have his Pro Bowl tight end. He didn't have his best veteran receiver. He's facing Jadeveon Clowney. He's facing Pete Carroll. And by the way, Monday Night Football against Russell Wilson, that's like a playoff game. Kyle Shanahan gets it. Kyle Shanahan, thank God his coach isn't overreacting like Twitter. He gets Jimmy Garoppolo.
Jimmy don't really change. You know, Jimmy's always the same, so there's no difference there. I thought he battled. He battled very hard, hung in the pocket for a while. I thought he made some big plays, but I know he made a number of plays he'd like to have back also.
Listen, nobody could catch Jimmy Garoppolo's passes last night. His guys are the Seahawks late. He looked a little flustered. They all do. Because young quarterbacks fluctuate as they're learning the position wildly based on who do they face, how's their offensive line holding up, and are their weapons healthy. And last night he had three real challenges. By the way, Jimmy Garoppolo has the same number of career starts as Sam Darnold. And we're holding off on Sam Darnold. He didn't have enough start. He's got three fewer starts than Baker Mayfield. And we're saying, well, let's not rush to bury Baker Mayfield. Garoppolo started 19 games. He's 16-3. Jimmy Garoppolo, 19 starts, 16-3. He's good. We're good here. Yes, he didn't look quite as calm as Russell Wilson. You know, that's sort of the way it is. You know, that's kind of the way it is when you're on the field with Brady and Breeze and Russell Wilson, guys who have mastered the toughest position in sports.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
One of the things I really like is I like a lot of the analytics in sports. I like how, like, sports change. You know, one of my knocks on baseball is it looks the same as it did 100 years ago. I want more stuff. I like new stuff. I like risks. And the NFL, I mean, first of all, got all these quarterbacks coming in now, and it's so much fun to watch. But the other thing is, it used to be people didn't make trades in the NFL. Jimmy Johnson was the first guy to go out and say, I'm going to get, you can have Herschel Walker, I want eight players. People didn't do that in the NFL. Now we have trades. Well, now it's crazy. Now you're seeing stuff you didn't see 5 years ago, mid-season trades. Aggressive wins in sports. Think about the teams this year that made mid-season moves. They're all paying off. Michael Bennett of the Cowboys. Oh, wait, he's good. Jadeveon Clowney last night. Minkah Fitzpatrick of the Steelers. Marcus Peters of the Baltimore. He solved their big dilemma. Jalen Ramsey of the Rams. No question their defense now carries the team. Emmanuel Sanders, wide receiver San Francisco, walked in, two practices in, made an impact. Mohamed Sanu is already after Edelman, the number two target for New England. And Laremy Tunsil saved Deshaun Watson's bacon. Left tackle. These were aggressive midseason trades. For the record, many of them panned. Laremy Tunsil move, panned. Minkah Fitzpatrick, panned. I mean, you're going to tell me that Jadeveon Clowney wasn't worth that third-round pick Seattle gave up? Aggressive wins. And here's why it's important, is that as good as Pete Carroll is, Pete Carroll has whiffed on a lot of first-round draft picks. That running back Penny, they don't want him near the field. That was a couple years ago, running back, first round, the Penny kid for San Diego State. They don't want him near the field. Their running back's a seventh-round guy they love. Minkah Fitzpatrick got ripped. But when you get these veteran coaches who don't sit and watch college football, but they sit and watch NFL film all day, Bill Belichick has whiffed on a million picks. But how often has Bill Belichick whiffed when you get him a guy already in the league that he's watched and played against? He doesn't whiff much. Pete Carroll's seen Jadeveon Clowney. You also get the expertise of a Belichick or a Pete Carroll or a Mike Tomlin who can take Minkah Fitzpatrick. They scout him. They watch him in the league. They move him into their system. These draft picks, I mean, I remember covering Warren Sapp in Tampa when I worked in Tampa. Sapp was great. He was lost for about 15 games. He was just lost. Now, he became a Hall of Fame level player. But if I can get a Clowney, a Mohamed Sanu, these guys know the playbook. They figure it out quickly. You'll put them in. Emmanuel Sanders is in San Francisco for an hour. It's like, boom. They got wide receiver, rookie wide receivers they've had for a year now. They still can't catch and get the playbook down. So, I mean, Mohamed Sanu walks into New England and Brady trusts him first game. First game he throws to him. Second game he's a go-to target. They draft a receiver, N'Keal Harry, from Arizona State. They still don't play him. Brady doesn't trust him. So aggressive wins, midseason trades, get a veteran, been in the league. And here's the other thing that Pittsburgh did by adding Minkah Fitzpatrick. is that, and I think Pete Carroll figured this out, adding Jadeveon Clowney and Josh Gordon, it adds juice to your locker room. I mean, Seattle's in a dogfight with San Francisco. But when you bring Josh Gordon in, players know Josh can play. Players know Jadeveon can play. Those guys fill out the uniform. It adds juice to the locker room. Guys are like, oh, we're all in. When the Steelers added Minkah Fitzpatrick, what Mike Tomlin was saying is, oh, I don't care if Big Ben's out. We're going to go win this division. We're going to go win this division. By the way, it adds juice. Pittsburgh has played better since Minkah arrived, not just because of Minkah, but because of the energy and the symbolism of adding a star player. We're not calling the season off. Football's hard, man. Week 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you can lose guys in locker rooms. Not physically. You lose them emotionally. And I'm looking at all these. Laramie Tunsil move got ripped. Minkah move got ripped. I mean, Houston's a different team. Seattle's defense last night was the more dominant defense at times. So aggressive wins in sports. Make in-season trades.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
As a sportscaster, I think Joy and I both feel this. We don't want to overreact to individual wins. But there are wins. I mean, Baltimore dominating New England. You're like, all right, I see the world differently. I don't think New England's terrible, but I look at Baltimore after that game and I'm like, oh boy, that was ugly. So Seattle, San Francisco, Dallas, Minnesota, we had a lot of these big kind of transforming games. So this week's Herd hierarchy, we thought a lot about it, and here we go. It's an interesting one.
Herd hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to Colin. Number 10.
Pittsburgh Steelers, let's just say it. They have the best offensive line in football. I don't think it's Dallas. I think it's Pittsburgh. How do you have the best red zone offense in the NFL with Mason Rudolph and backup running backs? Because you just road grade everybody. Four-game winning streak. Only 11 sacks allowed. Again, Mason Rudolph is not mobile. You can't get to Mason Rudolph. 26 takeaways. Their front seven is so dynamic athletically. Between the Niners and the Steelers, there are more 24, 25-year-old guys. This is the best offensive line in football. It's Mike Tomlin's best coaching job. And listen, they're the Colts with more dynamic defensive players and offensive players. The Colts have a great O-line. We know that. This is the best offensive line in football, number 10.
Number 9.
Houston. Houston has kind of quietly become a great running team. You can't run on them. They're the opposite of Kansas City. They run it, and you can't run on them. Third in rush defense, fourth in rush offense. And by the way, Deshaun Watson has been dicey in September, but he's never lost a November game. They're coming off a bye. He's healthy. The offensive line is healthier. Watch out for Houston, number 9.
Number 8.
Little bit of fool's gold with Green Bay. I'll put him at 8. Do we know anything about Matt LaFleur? I didn't love their situational stuff this weekend. They've been outgained by 300 yards this year. That's with Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones. They've been outgained this year. They're 28th in total defense. They beat up a little bit on Kirk Cousins. They beat Dak. Aaron tends to play really good in Dallas, but I think there's a little fool's gold here. I think their defense is opportunistic. I do like the fact they have a running game for Aaron, but I don't know enough about Matt LaFleur, and I don't trust this team yet in big games.
Number 7.
The Cowboys. Now, I know, but the Cowboys, listen, teams get better during the course of a season. Dak is clearly getting better. To me, as a quarterback, Dallas has the better offensive line than Green Bay. They're number 1 in total offense. They're number 1 in third down offense. I think they have the second best offensive line in the NFL to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Dak, by the way, is on pace. Career highs in completion percentage, passing touchdowns, passing yards. They're a very good team. Are they special? No. But I think they do certain things exceptionally well, and they do more things exceptionally well than Green Bay. I know Green Bay beat them, but at this point, I trust Jason Garrett, I do, more than Matt LaFleur, so I'll put Dallas at 7.
Number 6.
Minnesota Vikings, one slot ahead. I think they're very close. Listen, that was their first win against the winning team on the road in 2 years. Let's not go crazy. And Kirk Cousins completed 6 passes to wide receivers. This is about defense, head coach, and a running game. Delvin Cook is remarkable. How about that one run when he bounced off a couple of Cowboy defenders? I mean, just pinballed it. This is a team that has an identity. I wish their identity was like their quarterback, but it's their coach, their running game, and their defense. They just beat Dallas on the road. That's a rarity. They don't do that much. But I think Minnesota's a slot ahead of Dallas at number six.
Number five.
New England. I think they still need another offensive piece. I think they have good backs. Mohamed Sanu is clearly their number two after Julian Edelman. They have the most takeaways in the NFL. Some of that is they played crappy quarterbacks. They have the best head coach and the best clutch quarterback, and they'll probably play a playoff game in Foxborough. But their offensive personnel, I got to be honest with you. I said this last year, and they won the Super Bowl. They just Gronk ended up being so big for them against Kansas City and so big for them against the Rams. Their last year's offense, without Josh Gordon's speed and without Gronk, they need another piece offensively.
Number four.
Seattle. I think it matters. I think you have to holistically look at Seattle. They didn't have Jadeveon Clowney when the season started. They did not have Josh Gordon, who had two big catches last night. I think they're coming together, and I think Josh is a special player. He was big last night in a couple of big third down, and I think Clowney was absurd. By the way, you know, you think of Seattle, and you think, you know, they have all these disparate parts offensively. They're fifth in total offense, and they faced a real schedule here. They faced San Francisco. They faced Baltimore. They faced a real schedule here. Russell Wilson leads the NFL in passing touchdowns, passer rating, and I think Clowney, Josh Gordon are really nice pieces.
Number three.
The Saints got blown out. Don't worry about it. There is a big concern with the Saints. They don't have a vertical passing threat. One of the things I look at is how many 20-plus yard plays do you have? I mean, you can't go on 13-play drives and win a Super Bowl. You have to be able to go over the top. They're like 25th in the NFL. They just don't beat you over the top. That's why Teddy Bridgewater was a perfect Drew Brees prototype. You know, smart, coachable, get the ball out, complete it. They don't turn the ball over. They only have, which is just crazy. They have six turnovers all year. That's crazy. They have a very good offensive line. They play real defense. They got a pass rush. So they have a lot of elements I like. Quarterback, coach, defense. But they do not get any freebies offensively. I mean, Ted Ginn's their number two receiver. He's more of a returner than a receiver in his best days. So that's the concern.
Number two.
San Francisco. Again, I know Seattle beat them. They didn't have George Kittle. When a young quarterback doesn't have a Pro Bowl tight end or Emmanuel Sanders, that would be like taking Lamar Jackson and saying, all right, you don't get your best tight end and you don't get Mark Ingram. Like young quarterbacks need their best weapon. San Francisco's got a lot of talent wide receiver, but their best veteran receiver really didn't play much, and their world-class tight end didn't play. And I thought it was Garoppolo was throwing the guys that he would prefer not to throw to, who mostly couldn't catch last night. It's not an excuse. It's a reality. You know, let's be honest about him. Red zone defense, passing defense, sacks, you know, 1-1, 2-2, they're great.
Number one.
I'm going to go to Baltimore. I thought a lot about this morning. They dominated New England and they dominated Seattle. I watched both those games. They didn't just win. They dominated both those teams. They dominate Pete Carroll and Belichick. All right, that's good enough for me. The other thing to remember is they had a really ugly loss against Cleveland. Okay, since then, teams get better as the season goes on. Since then, they're a top six defense. Listen, it happens. I mean, it just happens. You have bad Sundays. You know, you're missing a left tackle. You're missing a right guard. You got a Baltimore. If you take out the Cleveland game, I got too many good wins. By the way, they're 13-3 in their last 16 games. They have something that I think is incredibly important, an identity. And I think Marcus Peters has also solved their big issue. Early in the year, we said the same thing. They need a corner. They went and got one. Baltimore is number one.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Being well-rounded, I think, in the NFL can be kind of overrated. I think we all know coaching matters in the NFL. The other thing I think about is identity matters. I think that's kind of the Baltimore story this year. Baltimore has an identity. What are you? And I'll give you a great example. Sunday night, Minnesota had a very strong identity. Dalvin Cook, screens running, took the game over. Seattle last night had a very strong identity. Russell, this is why we pay you 35 large. Take the game over. It was Russell made all the decisions. Meanwhile, Dallas on Sunday night, play calling, what? So I thought about this. So as we go into the playoffs, I thought about the 10 best teams. Let's start in the AFC. I'm going to do all the divisional leaders. That's eight teams. And then two other teams that don't lead the division, Minnesota and Seattle, that are very good. The NFC is better. So what is the Patriots' identity? Head coach, quarterback. Pretty clear. Ravens' identity. Head coach, quarterback. Texans' identity. Quarterback. Chiefs' identity. Head coach, quarterback. So who has the weakest identity? The Texans. That's my least favorite division leader. I do think they're trying to develop the running game, and it's getting there. They got to make sure they get that running game figured out. That's going to be the key to Houston. You better have a legit running game so you don't depend on Deshaun. But the weakest identity in the AFC is the one I think's the first out in the playoffs. Let's go now to the six teams in the NFC, the divisional leaders, and Seattle and Minnesota. What is the 49ers' identity? Head coach, D-line. Packers, I would say it's Aaron Rodgers and the newfound legitimate running game. That's a real running game now. Saints, head coach, quarterback. Cowboys, they don't know what their identity is. You saw their play calling late. They don't know what the hell their identity is. They took the ball out of Dak's hands. He was having his best game as a pro. Seattle, we saw their identity last night. Pete Carroll runs the defense, Russell Wilson. We saw Minnesota. Defense, Dalvin Cook, and I would say Mike Zimmer's defensive game plans. The two teams right now of the 10 best teams, Houston has a chance to find an identity. Deshaun and a top five running game. I think they can get there. Dallas doesn't know what they are. They don't know what they are. Now, in my opinion, what is Dallas? Dak and that O-line. Give Dak time to throw. I've argued this. Amari's as valuable as Zeke, in my opinion. Now, I'm in the minority there. Most of you, when the season started, said the identity is Zeke. I've never bought into that. Okay, Dak was losing games when he had Zeke. Dak doesn't lose a ton when he's got the O-line healthy, Tyron Smith, left tackle, and Amari Cooper. So that's, to me, Dallas has the weakest identity of the 10 best teams in the league. Now, because they've got exceptional talent, the best linebacking duo, Zeke, Dak, Amari, to me, outside of Pittsburgh, second best offensive line in football, they can overcome some of those. But I think, I mean, let's be honest. The Rams last year got to a Super Bowl. You didn't have to love the Rams, but they had an identity. The minute Gurley got hurt, it was a little muddy. Cooper Kupp got hurt, a little muddy. And by the Super Bowl, New England, Rams didn't know what they were offensively. They didn't really have an identity. So that's what I ask about Dallas this morning. What are they? So that's, you got to put your arms around Dak. Dak is starting. The O-line's healthy. That's your team. I've said this. I like Zeke. But if you told me today I had Duke, who's a good back? Who's not a special back? Sony Michel. I think Dak could win a bunch of games with a healthy O-line, Dak and Sony Michel. Nick Chubb, I think Dak could win a bunch of games. I don't think Dallas is winning these games without Dak and Tyron Smith and Travis Frederick. I think Dallas could win. I think Dallas could get to the NFC Championship without Zeke. As long as you gave me a B running back. A Nick Chubb's terrific. Sony Michel, a couple young guys. And the guy for Seattle last night that you see. But I don't think Dallas knows what they are. I don't think they do. I don't think Dallas Cowboy fans know. I think their play calling late in that game told me everything I need to know. And if you go into a playoff and you don't have an identity, because none of you think they got the coaching. We know coaching matters. None of you like Jason Garrett. So now I don't have a coach. I don't have a Harbaugh. I don't have John Harbaugh. I don't have Andy Reid. Don't have Pete Carroll. Don't have Belichick. I don't have Sean Payton. You would acknowledge that. So you better have an unbelievable identity. That's where Baltimore comes in. I get the coach, then I get the identity. And I got some misgiving. Lamar gets popped here in the next 7 weeks. It's not the same team. But I think it's a real thing. And I think we saw last night, a team with a strong offensive identity. Russell wins. Minnesota Sunday, strong offensive identity. Dalvin Cook wins. Even San Francisco last night without George Kittle. Emmanuel Sanders. Offensively, San Francisco didn't quite know what they were. You got Garoppolo's throwing to guys he'd rather not throw to. It matters.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Played a decade and a half in the NBA. My pleasure. A three-time first-team all-defense. He made it in this league because he could play defense. He was annoying. Kobe said he's the best defensive player that ever guarded him. Absolute pleasure to bring on Tony Allen. Celtics, of course. Memphis still lives there. So let's get into this. You made your way. Eddie Sutton in college at Oklahoma State said, son, you're going to make the NBA if you play defense. And so you decided I'm going to be a defensive player. So let's talk about the Kobe stuff because Kobe said you were a pain in the butt. How was Kobe to defend?
Well, he was very hard to defend. I mean, you look at his game, it's nothing he can't do. He could shoot. You go into the pick and roll, he's going to pull up. You know, you damn to shoot from three, he's going to shoot the three. And he's relentless going to the hole. So you take a guy like that whose confidence is sky high and who's very skilled, great footwork, he's hard to guard. I mean, he's a load for anybody.
What if you made him miss three straight shots?
He still wouldn't get discouraged. Like, he's shooting the first shot. Every shot is like his first shot after warm-ups.
Really?
He never get discouraged.
Now, LeBron's a little different, though.
Yeah, with LeBron, I think, like, if he missed, like, three or four, you know, you saw it in the Dallas Maverick
series
where they went zone. And I think, you know, shooting kind of discouraged him at early on in his career. I don't know about now. But when I was defending LeBron, it's like
– his confidence level dipped.
It dipped. And I would have to agree with
now, that. Now, let's ask about James Harden. So you saw a very early James Harden. He drives me nuts. He's developed into a great offensive player. How do you get under his skin?
It's kind of hard. You just basically just got to force him to the way he doesn't want to go. And that's right. You know, and he still gets his numbers. He still gets the call when he goes and try to get fouled. But most importantly, just compete. A lot of time with these guys, you just can't get discouraged. You got to live with the game plan. And if they finish with a big night on you, it's what the team wanted. So, but me, on the other hand, I take it personal. Like, I try to do a little bit different than scouting report. You know what I mean? So, like, they might sell me to shade them left. I might just stick them straight up just to see what he going to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I always did that throughout my career. So,
was there a great NBA player you felt you got under his skin a little?
Yeah, but he not really no guy we talk about.
Who?
Kevin Martin.
Kevin Martin's a good player.
Yeah, I kind of harassed him a lot throughout my career.
Were you a trash talker?
You
were physical as hell.
I speak in third person. So if I get a good stop, I say, good job, T.A.
That's okay.
Yeah, it was kind of irritating for them.
So the three best guys, you said hardest to defend, Kobe, Kevin, and James Harden. Yeah, Kevin, good luck. LeBron's not on that list. And some of it is he loses confidence.
I mean, at the time I was playing with him, you know. I'm playing against him. I thought part of that was me being confident as well, you know, and me competing and being ready for the challenge. And I just saw when I played him, he wasn't just that confident in shooting the shot, although that was the scouting report. But most guys who we think are the prolific guys, they take those shots. Like, you better not leave me open. I didn't see that in him at the time. That's when he was in Cleveland, though.
And then he went to Miami.
I ain't get a load of him then. I was in Memphis by then.
Tony Allen's joining us, three-time first-team All-NBA. What do you make of a player like Westbrook? Dynamic, not a great shooter. So you face a Westbrook where you can give him some space because he's not going to burn you on threes. Is he a hard guy to defend, an easier guy to defend? Harden Westbrook, to me, may not work. What was Westbrook like?
I think Westbrook, he was one of those guys who was just nonstop energy, one of those guys who was relentless as well. Then never saw a shot he didn't like. But one thing that sticks out about him, he's not scared to go to that offensive glass. He's not scared to make a backdoor cut when maybe, say, like a guy like Harden is in motion and in dribble. You know, I think he do a lot of things, little things that'll help that ball club. You probably don't think that duo will work. But I think if he take the initial – that I'm going to sit back, I'm going to let you do you, Harden, and I'm going to attack the glass, get him people involved, and, you know, get out on the break. I think that'll be a good fit for him, and he'll blossom.
What do you make? You were a guy that took a great deal of pride and effort. What do you make of load management?
Load management, in my day, you was kind of being a wuss.
Sure.
And now it's kind of helpful for guys and their careers, but I think it hurt the fan ultimately. You know,
yeah.
Just think of my little cousin or something wanted to come see a Kawhi Leonard.
I grew up in a small town. I went to one game a year. It was a 2.5-hour drive to get to a game.
So like that for an example, and let's just say it was Bird or Magic or whoever didn't play, you'd probably been hurt.
Yeah.
It probably killed your moment.
I went to the Kingdom, watched Larry Bird play, and if Larry Bird didn't play, it would have been a waste of – I mean, that, I remember as a kid going, because you didn't have all the games on TV, so no. Larry Bird just saw in the playoffs, and I'm like, oh, Larry Bird's coming to Seattle once a year, and I went and saw him play.
Yeah, and that would have hurt you if he had not played. Huh?
Well, let's talk Kawhi Leonard. I said before, here's how I judge the best player in the game. I need a bucket. Number one guy in the league right now, Kawhi Leonard. I need a stop. Number one guy in the league right now, Kawhi. If I need a bucket or a stop. So I think Kawhi is the best player today, this moment in the NBA. Do you?
I mean, coming off a run like he just left with Toronto, I would agree. But I don't know. It's a lot of basketball left. It's early, you know. I want to see how this team developed throughout the year. They haven't hit no adversity yet, you know. I'm not a big fan of Zubac neither. I really think they need to, you know, improve in that area. But defensively, you're right. If we have to get a stop, we're going through Kawhi. If we have to get a bucket, we're going through Kawhi.
He's got a little, you know, he's a cross between Kobe length and Michael hand size.
Yeah.
You didn't guard Michael. How would you stop Kawhi?
Well, to me, Kawhi plays a lot like Mike in the sense that he backs the ball up. So basically, you got to be ready to get in that weight room just to defend that strength and his IQ as far as being a guard. And a power forward, you know, he played power forward in college. I think he kind of got the edge, and he mixes it up. So you got to be ready to be in the weight room with a guy like him.
So when was your first year in the NBA?
2004.
So you didn't play Michael. You got Kobe, though, in his prime.
I got Kobe in his prime. He gave me 42 points one game.
Really?
6 fouls in 8 minutes.
What timeouts? Come again. You got 6 fouls in 8 minutes?
In 8 minutes against Kobe.
How'd you sleep that night?
I didn't sleep. I didn't sleep. I was so embarrassed. And I think that game right there made me really start paying attention to film. I started watching film more and more after that. Because I was like, yo, how did he foul me out?
By the way, did he say anything to you? Did he ever show you that he respected you, Kobe?
No, but he definitely disrespected me that day. Because when I fouled out, he waved at me. Yeah.
He waved at you?
Yeah, I remember that vividly.
Was he a trash talker?
Yeah. He'll let you know if you got a good block. He'll say good shot, a good block. He talked to you. Kobe's a talker.
Were you a talker?
No, I couldn't. I ain't had no time to talk. Because my room for error was short. So
it's interesting. You know, we always think of there's pressure on the shooter. But you'd go into a series, the pressure was on you.
Exactly.
I mean, did you sense that pressure?
Yeah, I can recall series where coaches would say, you know, well, you got this guy, Tony, it's on you. To ultimately bring us home defensively, and I'd be sitting somewhere in my seat like, whoa. But it's a challenge. I'm up for it. I always embraced it, never shied away from it.
Who was the best coach you had?
That's a good question. I have to say Doc Rivers.
Why?
I don't know. He pretty much let me know what I was going to need to do to stay in the league. You know, I was playing right alongside Ray Allen and Paul Pierce, and, you know, sometimes I would shoot shots that were ill-advised.
And what did he say?
He'd tell me, yo, like, if you want to stay on this court and let alone be in this league, you need to swing, and go get you a rebound, put back, or get it in transition.
And it didn't bother you when he said that?
No.
He was honest.
He was blatantly honest.
Yeah, I'm a huge Doc Rivers fan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Doc Rivers treats you like a grown-up. I think he's honest.
Yeah.
Not all coaches do, by the way.
No, coaches do.
Did you ever get in a good fight in the NBA?
Nobody really ever attempted to fight me. I don't know.
You know, you were tough. I always thought you were a tough guy. You were kind of intimidating, though.
Yeah, probably when I grow my hair. Other than that, I'm a nice guy, man.
14 years, he still lives in Memphis. Absolute pleasure. Love to have you on the show again. One of the great defensive players, and a guy really that took an incredible, Bruce Bowen's another one, took incredible pride in his defense. Tony Allen, great meeting you.